If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
All right, in a historic partnership with Lyric Opera of Chicago, Billy Corgan, the frontman of the two-time Grammy Award-winning iconic rock band, The Smashing Pumpkins, reimagines the era-defining album, Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, and the world premiere concerts for seven performances taking place November 21st through the 30th. Concerts will celebrate the project's 30th anniversary this fall, paying homage to the record and expanding the definition and intention of opera. Billy and the Machines of God are heading out on a full band tour in June, featuring songs from classic Smashing Pumpkins albums. They'll be out in Joliet on June 20th and at Summerfest in Milwaukee on June 27th. And finally, the NWA is not for sale, and wrestling is Billy's passion, and we will talk about that too. And now Billy Corgan joins us live once again on WGN Radio. How are you, pal?
I'm great. Thank you so much. It's so exciting when I hear talk of the Lyric Opera shows. It's just become this kind of North Star for my year, and just so pleased with the response and the interest, and tickets are selling really, really well. And I can't say for sure, but it's certainly pointed towards a sellout at this point.
That's awesome. I know there's something about this and performing with, I mean, the opera. Like, how did that all come about?
You know, through a friend in town, he kept poking me, saying, you really should do something with them. And I kept saying over and over again, I can't imagine a scenario where they'd want to work with me. You know, looking at their schedule every year, and of course the esteemed people involved, I just thought, oh, there's just really no bandwidth for something like this. But eventually a meeting was sort of set up. And I think within the first 5 minutes after I kind of mapped out my vision, and I think they understood that I had taken the time to think through their sensitivities from their end on what they would need to see or what they would need from me. I think within the first 5 minutes, we were like, okay, let's do this. And we just jumped in, and it's been a fantastic experience so far. They've been incredible. I know they're very, very enthused by the publicity and the marketing, because I think, look, we're all on the same page. We want to support this incredible August institution, which brings so much joy and incredible art to Chicago. And being part of that, helping young people particularly come into the this incredible venue. And then also I think it's this notion of Chicago is really at its best when we work together.
Yeah.
And you know, when we find this kind of common ground. You know, I think back to when I was a kid and I would go see Blues Fest or something, where there was this kind of banding together of energies to celebrate these great blues artists, you know, mm-hmm. where it was about the blues, but it seemed to sort of reach a higher note. And I think that's what we're finding here.
Well, and I think there's also, isn't there new leadership at the Lyric Opera? So I think this is very visionary to do something like this. And honestly, this album is the perfect album for this.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Mr. Mangum's been fantastic. And, you know, I said to him in that first meeting, like, look, I really want to put myself in your hands. I'm not interested in opera goes rock. You know
right.
what I mean? This has
right,
to
yeah.
work within your world.
Yeah.
I really want, and I know many of the top donors for the Lyric. I mean, some of them are friends of ours, my mm-hmm. wife and I. Mm-hmm. And we understand that crowd fairly well. And I said, if they're not out there and enjoying this, we're going the wrong direction.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, and plus it really kind of, you know, everyone talks about it's not your grandpa's rock and roll. It's not your grandpa's country music. It's not your grandpa's opera either, right?
I don't know. I think we've entered such a different part of our musical history here in the West. If you look at any pop artist on the charts right now, there's such a mixture of genres and musical styles. I don't care if it's a rap track using guitars. Look, what was one of the big albums of last year? It was Beyonce's country record.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah.
As a musician, you know, I always go back to the great Duke Ellington quote where he said there's two types of music, good and bad. And it's such a fantastic quote because it really sums it up.
Yeah.
I don't like every opera, but I don't like every rock album. You know what I'm saying? Finding things that you can emotionally connect to and kind of bridge you to the greater appreciation of something. You know, I didn't care at all about country music when I was young. And I dated somebody who was young who loved Hank Williams. And, of course, that's an easy entry point. Hank Williams, one of the great songwriters, one of the great music artists of all time, not just country. But suddenly I found myself interested in country music. Hank Williams was my gateway drug to a musical genre which I absolutely adore and love now. And it's been the same way for me with opera. It took something like Mozart's Requiem for me to start saying, okay, there's something here for me. And I think this is a great gateway drug for rock fans to understand that the lyric has so much to offer, as does the CSO, you know.
But what's funny about you saying that is that, you know, there has to be some kind of artist that gets you interested enough to do that. And I mean, you know, I know people that maybe have never been at the Lyric Opera before are going to go to see you and see what this is all about. I mean, that's what I think is really cool.
That's the number one compliment I've gotten. Very Chicago. I've never been to the Opera House, but I'm going for you, you know. I take it as a great compliment. And listen, this is why when I presented my ideas to the board for the Lyric, I said, listen, this has to be about a celebration of what you guys are great at. I'm the composer. I'm totally fine with an adaptation of my work into your idiom. I don't need you to rock out. You know, we don't need, you know, the lead violin chair wearing, you know, a pumpkin shirt. We don't need any of that.
I
want to see your world on its best foot forward. And that's what's so exciting to me. And if we can make that translation and we're still working on it, well, then that's where I think the success will be recognized.
Yeah, maybe bringing your music and the opera together, maybe the Pope will come.
Well, we got to get him out of Comiskey first.
Yes, we do. First, I want to tell you, congratulations to you and Chloe on Juno, your third little one, back in March. How exciting is life, really?
Oh, it's crazy, you know. I'm lucky in that I had such a crazy and incredible musical life, good and bad, up until I met Chloe some 13 years ago, and then my life started to take this other direction, which really became about home and family. You know, when I bought this house up here in Highland Park in 2003, you know, I lived up here by myself.
Yeah, it was empty.
Crazy, beautiful mansion, and people used to say, where's your family? Where is that part of your life? And I would say, I don't know. I'm waiting. I felt like I was waiting for a bus that would never come. Now it's, you know, Taekwondo classes and piano classes and my daughter's, you know, on the Steinway playing, you know, Mozart. It's something out of a movie, but I've lived it and I'm very appreciative. And Chicago is such a part of that. I tried to live other places, and I always came home. So there was something about coming home that always seemed to restore me and kind of get me back, get my feet back on the ground and get me pointed in the right direction.
I know. And now with the third, sleeping through the night is just a luxury anyway, right?
Yeah. I say this to amuse your great audience. You know, as you can imagine, my children's lungs and the tone of their voice is perfect for a rock song. So 3 a.m., that siren goes off. It's like, oh, there's the rat in the cage voice right in the genetic line.
That's awesome. Well, you'll discover some good late-night television, watch some Kojak or something overnight while you're up anyway. It'll be fine.
Watching last night the 1932 film Faithless with Tallulah Bankhead.
Wow.
I can't remember the male lead. It was basically the movie where Hollywood sort of decided that she didn't really have a future in Hollywood, which is interesting because she went back on the stage, became an absolute sensation. She was a sensation on the stage, then went back and became an even bigger sensation on the stage, and then I think had a major Hollywood comeback in the 40s.
Late night is perfect for black and white movies. Always
I love it. I have very fond memories. Here, you have to be over 50 to remember this one. Watching, because I had no bedtime as a child because I had a rock and roll father.
Yeah,
and most of my family stayed up very late for whatever reason. So watching WGN television at night, and they would play the late, I think it was called the late movie.
Yeah.
And it was Mr. Samuelson. I can never think of his first name.
Orion
Sam. So I think he was the voice. And you knew the movie was coming out because they play Take Five by the Dave Brubeck.
Oh, I love that. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Right? And that would be the introduction at whatever it was, 1 a.m. for the late movie. And that's when I first saw a lot of those old Hollywood movies with my grandmother at like 2 a.m.
We had a lot of great voices. It might have been Marty McNeely. We had a ton of them that day. Because Orion was up for the farm report at like 4 a.m. So he might have taped that. But yeah,
I forever have PTSD listening to him talk about corn futures. I mean, there was something about listening to that in the morning on my way to school that just damaged me somehow.
Hog futures are up for that incredible voice. All right, we are talking to Chicago's own Billy Corgan. So talk to me a little bit about what you're doing this summer. There's always something happening in your world, a lot, quite frankly. But let's talk about Billy Corgan and the Machines of God and what's happening.
Sure. So I'm going out on my first ever rock solo tour, which is interesting.
Wow.
Going out under the name The Machines of God, which is actually one of the mythical names for the Smashing Pumpkins, mm-hmm. if anybody knows our album from 2000 mm-hmm. called Machina, the band goes through a rechristening on the concept of the album. So I'm going out under that name and celebrating 30 years of melancholy, which is the year to start celebrating right. that, which is just crazy to me. And then 25 years of that album, Machina, from 2000, and then also going to play songs from the new Pumpkins album, which is called The Gory Mori May.
That's very cool. Now, who's in the band?
Kiki Wong, who's currently the additional
drummer.
Guitar player with the Pumpkins.
Or guitar. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then a man named Jake Hayden, who I met through Trev Lukather, Steve Lukather of Toto's son, a good friend of mine, both uh-huh. of them now, actually. And then Kid Tiger, who's going to be on bass, who's been a friend of mine for a few years, and is a musical artist and also has a record out on my label, which we put out through Madame Souza's, which is Martha's Music. So, you know, kind of it's a bit of a home week thing in that, you know, even though I don't know Jake well yet, between Kiki and Jenna, these are two people that I know personally, and obviously Kiki I work with professionally.
Very, very cool. And I know, you know, Spin, Billboard, they're all putting their guests, the list of what you're going to play. They're talking about a few songs that have never been played in, you know, live before from the Smashing Pumpkins that you're going to throw on the list as well.
Yeah, you know, back in the day, I think at our absolute peak in the 90s, we were capable of playing any number of, I think, 60 songs at any given time. And we would go out every night and play a different set list. And as the band has grown in stature and you know, gets some moss on us over time, you know, the set list gets narrow and narrower, and just like it does for any band that sort of survives the cut, which is, you know, people want to see the greatest hits.
Sure.
And so, unfortunately, you know, we haven't really been in a position of late to kind of get into these deeper cuts. So that's kind of, that's how I want to celebrate the albums, is not just sort of play some of the hits, which is amazing that they even are there, but to play some of these songs that have never been played live.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And then, you know, then back to the Pumpkins, you're off to Italy, Germany, Iceland, Japan, circling the globe later this summer.
Yes, and also going to the Middle East for the first time. I'm here soon.
Yeah, saw that.
So
nice. It's
crazy. I mean, you know, we started in, you know, my father, you know, used to do illicit things out of his bedroom over there on the northwest side. Austin and Addison, and that's where the band started, just James Iha and I, and that was circa around 1987, so the fact that here we are still circumnavigating the planet, playing our music, you know, carrying Chicago into the world has been an incredible, crazy journey.
Not everybody thinks this way, and getting to know you over the last couple of years, you're a grateful person. Like, you, not a lot of people really think about those early days and how they got there and still pinching themselves, you know, 30 plus years later, you know?
You know, I appreciate the compliment, but there was a time where I really wasn't that grateful. I felt very impugned or impinged upon. I can't think of the word. I felt like there was the shadow over me that was called the 90s. You know, I felt mm-hmm. like there was a segment of the world that didn't want me to move on and grow up. And I think part of that, to be fair to me, was the music business had never seen a collapse like we saw in the late 90s into the 2000s with the rise of Napster and online piracy and stuff like that. It really threw the, you know, the music business for a 10 or 15 year loop. So it put a lot of artists in the position going into the 30s and 40s of having to kind of create a new economy, which really was about sort of just hanging on by your fingernails.
Right. Yeah. That's very true.
And so, you know, that put me in this weird position where I was like, God, I mean, I don't want to live the rest of my life as if this other guy created this thing called the Smashing Pumpkins, and I'm supposed to forever be in debt to it. But somewhere along the way, having survived that and having survived my own insanity, I came out the other side and I was like, wow, I mean, I know it sounds as simple as like a Jimmy Stewart movie, but I found myself thinking, if you would have told me at 15 years old standing in my bedroom staring out the window watching my brother skateboard.
Yeah.
That I would be on this stage. You know, I mean, I've been on every stage you can imagine, whether it was the Ryman, where literally exactly where Hank Williams used to stand.
Yeah.
Or Madison Square Garden, where obviously Led Zeppelin filmed Song Remains the Same, or wherever. I mean, I've been on every one of those stages. And if you would have told me at 15, here's the good, here's the bad, I still would have taken it. So yeah. I had to kind of work that out in my head over time. And if anybody knows anything about me, I'm stubborn in a way that I got to figure it out for myself. You can tell me all day long how great things are. I won't believe you. I have to feel it in myself. And once I kind of crossed that bridge, and certainly having a family had a lot to do with that, and looking at my kids, it was like, wow, I really was like, I'm the luckiest guy in the world, and I just need to get on with it and stop complaining.
I am very much like that as well. And I was just going to say, it also takes happiness. You have to be happy, and having a good partner in your life to realize how grateful you really are, right?
Yes. I mean, I've been asked a lot of questions, but one question that's come up a lot through the years is, how do you define happiness? And the answer I eventually arrived at was living one's purpose. You know, not everyone's meant to be an opera star, you know. I mean, I can't sing opera for, you know, I wish, you know.
Yeah.
And I wish I played for the Cubs. You know, there's things that don't happen the way we want them to. But I think when we get around to figuring out what we're good at and where we can contribute, there's a real happiness there. But when you have the kind of success I had, especially at a young age, and you don't have that other component, I didn't have the real support of my family. During those years, it was very confusing to them because they had sort of written me off mostly. And now suddenly I'm on the cover of every magazine and their friends are asking about me, and they're in this odd position of having to defend how they weren't really supportive or having to invent stories about their relationship with me that didn't exist. So that was a very awkward thing. And then, you know, you think, okay, you can buy your way forward, you know, whether it's a car or a house or whatever. And then you wake up one day and you don't have the things in life that you thought you would have. You don't have the kind of happiness and so you start to blame your work. You think, oh, well, this is the reason I don't have happiness. No, I wasn't able to appreciate what I had because I didn't have the perspective I needed, meaning I didn't have a party by which to enjoy the success with. Mm-hmm. And expecting the band to be that party is really an unfair thing. They had their own version they needed to sort through.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I always thought the Long Grove Bridge was the most frequent thing to be hit. Do people think the tea shop is a drive-thru? Like, what is that all about? Seriously.
Well, you know, now we have barriers out front. Why the city sort of reconciles with the fact of why did we have an accident in the exact same spot on the building twice in under 6 months. And thank God nobody was seriously injured. My mother-in-law did fracture her hip in the first incident.
Wow.
And my son was actually hit. He's convinced himself that he was not involved, which is very interesting. It's an really interesting sort of play on how memory works with trauma.
Yeah, that's very true. Wow, that's very true.
But the second time, thankfully, nobody was involved other than the lady who hit the building. So we're very grateful that no one was seriously hurt, because if you think about it, in either case, it could have been a fatal situation. So at least now with the summer coming and we do have tables outside, the city has put up barriers so no one has to worry.
Good to hear. Billy Corgan, The Machines of God, going on tour this June, Smashing Pumpkins, heading overseas later this summer. Lyric Opera happening this fall, and he balances it all.
Going on?
He balances it all with his growing family. Smashingpumpkins.com is where you can find it all. Billy, always a pleasure chatting. Look forward to do it again soon.
Thank you, my friend. Talk soon.